The Metal AI Podcast.
Hello, I'm Dr. Felix Beecher, and this is the Medical AI Podcast, a 30-minute thrill ride of big ideas. We talk to a range of top guests, from industry innovators to scientists to philosophers. This is brought to you by Informatech, where I'm the head of healthcare technology. The basis of sci-fi dystopias like Terminator and The Matrix is the concept of artificial general intelligence. This is the ability of an AI system to perform any intellectual task performed by humans. The recently released and much hyped ChatGPT has been described as the first glimmering of artificial general intelligence. It has passed exams for law, biology, medicine, even exams for being a wine sommelier. It is a type of AI system known as a large language model, but what does this mean for healthcare? I doubt there's anyone in the world who knows more about this subject than my guest, Dr. Harvey Castro. Harvey is a New York-based physician, serial entrepreneur, and author of two books on the application of ChatGPT to healthcare. Harvey, a very, very big welcome.
Honestly, this is such an honor to be here, and I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
First question, Harvey, how on earth did you get time to already write two books on ChatGPT?
Honestly, my wife's going to kill me. That's part of it. The other part of it is I have an issue when I get something in my head, I don't stop until I get it done. And I know it's a curse and a blessing, but it was really tough because honestly, it was around Christmas time. Whenever my wife was working on doing anything for Christmas, I would say, "Hey, honey, I'm gonna be in the office for a little bit because I know you're busy." And I'd run into the office and I started typing away. And honestly, it was crazy, but it was such a blessing in disguise. I had such a good time writing about it.
All right. Well, as you know, I already interviewed ChatGPT itself on its application to healthcare, and I'm definitely a fan, but I think you would already win a competition on charisma. So I'm very glad to have you here. Look, you've had a very successful career and you're still only young. So could you say something about what led to your interest in ChatGPT and its application to healthcare?
Yeah, I got to give this quick story. I'm an ER board certified ER doctor, and I was in the emergency room, and literally the iPhone, the first one, had just come out. And I was coding a patient, and I asked the nurse to give a certain medication, and she went, got a textbook, thumbed through it, finally found the dose and started. And I thought, there's got to be a faster way. This is taking too long. And so I literally created the first IV meds app in the world, and it was one of the top 10 medical apps. And fast forward, I was playing with ChatGPT, and I had this aha moment, like, oh my goodness, this is going to be the next iPhone. And I thought, I need to share this with doctors, patients. I need to get the word out. And I was just like a little kid, like excited. I'm like, I'm doing this.
Wonderful. So could you explain a little bit about how GPT works?
Yeah, the way I call it, I feel like it's just like having a friend. And I know that sounds like a weird statement, but you're basically having a conversation with ChatGPT, and it literally can customize and return any kind of questions to you in a personalized way.
Now, it seemed to burst out of nowhere at the end of 2022, but how did the technology develop over time?
Yeah, that's a really good question. There's been multiple large language models, and ironically, Google actually came up with this, and OpenAI just took it to the next level. I always tell my friends, when you think of ChatGPT, don't think of it as the guys that invented this. Just think of it as the guys that actually took it out to market first. And because no one had ever played with such a platform, it took off really quickly.
Now, we keep talking about ChatGPT, and that's what the hype has been about. But there are, of course, other language models and plenty of companies now developing technologies, which I guess will be, look fairly similar. So should we be talking about those two, or is it justified somehow that the conversation is always focused on ChatGPT specifically?
I think, honestly, for the conversation, it's easier just to talk about ChatGPT, but I think it's very important for people listening out there that Google's working on a model, Facebook's working on a model, and a lot of universities around the world are working on their own. Just as a side note, I feel like this is the next arms race, but it's the AI race where each company is trying to have their own. And to take it to the next level, China's creating their own. Elon Musk is creating their own. And literally recently, someone was able to create their own model with just $600. And they say it's pretty comparable to ChatGPT 3.5. So it's kind of interesting where this is headed, actually.
This next question is going to be out of date very, very quickly, but ChatGPT or GPT-4 was released, what, 3-4 days ago?
Yes, sir.
Have you explored that new version? How was it an upgrade on the previous version?
Yeah, good question. So they have released it. They've given certain features. Large companies have already signed up with them, the ability to use it. They haven't released what's called the API. And so developers are not able to fully create things for ChatGPT-4, but there is a waiting list for that. And so to answer your question, how is that different today? The input are obviously the same because I'm putting that information in, but the output is what has changed. So instead of being able to get, say, a 1 or 2 page return on my question, if I would like, and depending how I ask the question, it could return, you know, 10 to 40 pages worth of information. The accuracy is actually much higher. We always talk about putting ChatGPT and some of the things that come out. We call it the hallucination, where it doesn't really make sense, but it's kind of half true, half wrong. And some people think, oh, that's correct, but in reality, it's wrong. The new version of ChatGPT is more accurate, and there's less likely to have hallucinations. With that said, it'll still have it. But the most exciting part, as an ER board doctor, this is the part that I thought, wow, this would be a cool application. You can now take a picture. This function is not on the website yet, but it will be soon. And the computer will actually analyze the picture and will return an output. So instead of typing, you can literally put in a picture. Let me give you a healthcare example, though, something I came up with. As an ER doctor, one of the things I struggle with is unfortunately seeing patients that have overdosed on their medicines or try to kill themselves. Often we get an empty bottle or a bottle with a few pills and we don't know what that pill is. So we don't know what that patient took. What I see in the future happening is you take a picture of that pill or pills, it'll go into the database, it'll identify the pill. But more importantly, it'll go into a poison control type of database and return an output saying, okay, here's the antidote. These are the things. This is what you need to watch out for. And I think that's what's going to happen with that particular example in emergency medicine.
Let's talk at a high level about healthcare in particular. And how would you rate the importance of ChatGPT to healthcare? And it's difficult to make that question as specific as I'd like to, because I guess we could talk about the importance of it as things stand, but we could also talk about the next year or the next 10 years. I mean, would you like to try and tackle that?
Yeah, of course. One of the reasons I wrote this book, honestly, it was like my way of doing a public service announcement. I really feel like this tool, if used correctly, can really help both patients and physicians. And so immediately, what can be done? I know I've talked to physicians saying, hey, when I get stumped and I don't know what's going on with the patient, I can type in these symptoms into ChatGPT and it gives me what's called a differential diagnosis, basically a list of possibilities of diagnosis of diseases for that patient. And so that's one application that's really powerful. I can take it to the next level for me. As an ER doctor, there's been times where it's 2-3 in the morning and I'm exhausted and I've gone 24 hours plus and seeing a patient and then having that point where I'm like, huh, I think it could be this, I could be that, but I'm tired. being able to put that information into a computer and give me differential diagnosis of things that it could be, that is powerful. From a patient's point of view, I honestly think, unfortunately, doctors and patients don't have enough time. And so I feel like the more efficient you make the patient and the doctor, the more time they have to go over things. And so one of the advantages I see for patients is when they see, when, before they go see the doctor, I feel like they can have what's called a very high yield conversation, meaning if I know I have diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol, I can put in these symptoms into ChatGPT and explore what kind of questions I need to ask my doctor at my yearly visit, what kind of things I should follow up with. That way, when I go into the patient visit encounter with my doctor, it's really high yield. The other thing immediately that I see as an advantage and a disadvantage in a way is just education. And I feel that ChatGPT is going to help a lot of companies and websites have better content and more content that's been blessed by their physicians. And vice versa, patients will be able to tap into information. The problem is with ChatGPT, like I mentioned earlier, it's got this hallucination effect. So, and we'll go over that a little bit more, but the skinny is I think this is immediately going to help patients because it's just information that I think the more we know about medicine, as a society, our level of education will go up. And as a society increases their level of education, so will preventative medicine, because they'll know, hey, I probably shouldn't be eating that. Or, you know what, I probably should do more of this or that because my education level on healthcare has gone up. And so inadvertently, you're going to start doing things a little differently, which will ultimately impact your lifespan and disease processes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, ChatGPT, as I said in the introduction, it has passed exams for law, biology, medicine. When it comes to healthcare, the fact that this model can pass tests for a medical license, first of all, could you describe those studies and what does it tell us about its potential application to healthcare?
You know, it's very intimidating for a lot of doctors and healthcare providers because it's showing that this information is it being able to be analyzed by a computer and taken to the next level. What's interesting is those studies you mentioned, they purposely took out any visual pictures, anything that had to do with an X-ray or some interpretation of an EKG, because obviously the computer, there was no way of putting that into ChatGPT at that time. And so it did really well. And so as a doctor, you know, it's kind of a hard one because obviously as a doctor, you know, there's empathy and a computer will never be empathetic. There's that human feeling and touch and human gestalt that a computer is going to have a hard time understanding or even doing. With that said, what was really fascinating is they took out the pictures portion, but I believe there was another study and I can't remember the name of it, but basically they were able to put USMLE again, the same standardized test for doctors, but now they added pictures. And when they added the pictures of interpreting X-rays, EKGs, it actually scored higher. And this new version of ChatGPT is actually, for number four, is actually scoring higher on standardized tests like SATs. I believe it was like a little bit over 1,400 mm-hmm. on the SATs. It's a test here in the United States, which I thought, wow, that's crazy.
Now, you used an interesting phrase there, which is that a human doctor can understand a person as a gestalt, as a whole, in a way that it's going to be difficult for a computer. I guess the flip side of that is that human beings, in the way they create these gestalts of other human beings, are horribly biased. And I'm sure that human doctors are no exception. I need to give you one example. We are suckers for people who are good looking in general. And I'm sure that if you are Julia Roberts or something, you'll have people fawning over you just because of your beauty. That's just one example of how human beings can fall prey to these biases. And in that kind of sense, you'd expect computer systems to be superior and not to be swayed in those completely irrelevant kind of ways. So what do you think about that?
Well, it's a fascinating statement. I think early in my career, I learned about just different errors of thinking and just the science of thinking. I'll give you a quick real example is if a nurse comes into me and says, oh, it's Miss Smith and she always has the same thing and this is what's wrong. you know, that leading you and pushing you down a diagnosis, if you're not careful, you can be like, oh yeah. And you don't even think about it. You're like, yeah, it's that disease. And you make that mistake, where a computer would never fall into those biases because it's looking at straight data and saying, no, probability says X. And so I think there it's stronger. The problem with healthcare in general, and I don't see it as a problem. I think obviously there's this, I know I've gone into patients' rooms and just talking to them and saying things are going to be okay and holding their hand and crying with them and holding them. It's a different effect that I feel like it's a therapeutic effect. And that power of that therapeutic effect, I can honestly say and use this word, will never be replicated by a robot.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have touched on some of the applications, specific applications in healthcare, but the title of this episode is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So let's think a little bit more about the good applications. Then we'll talk a bit about the bad, which I think in this context means the current limitations and maybe how those could be addressed in time. And then let's think about the ugly, which is like the potential catastrophes. Could you give another couple of examples which illustrate the great potential of these kind of technologies?
Yeah, I heard of a study actually in England. This is actually fascinating. I think this is probably one of the best examples of something that could be done today. Basically, they took discharge instructions for a pediatric child. I think the child was about 5 years old, had asthma, and had just been diagnosed with asthma, and said, okay, here's your inhaler. And normally you would give the paperwork to the parents and educate the parents, and then off they go. And hopefully they never have an asthma flare up. What this hospital did, which I think is brilliant, is basically they took the discharge instructions, used the power of ChatGPT, and said, okay, convert this discharge instructions in a form of what that a five-year-old could understand. So now it changed the entire lingo and really made it so basic for a five-year-old. But not only there that I'm excited, they took basically Dolly, created a coloring book to match the discharge instruction and made an actual coloring book. And so now when the child goes home, they were able to give them a child the discharge summary, but it's in form of a coloring book. And now the child can color, can ask the parents about some of the questions and kind of start taking in all the things. And one of the biggest ones is medical compliance, taking your medicine when you're sick. So now the child's coloring, looking at it, interacting with it, getting more of a discharge instruction. And I think that example is huge. I think that is the next level of what we should be doing with this technology. And I think that's such a great blessing because now this patient is going to be able to really understand their disease. Taking it to an example as an older patient, I really believe on education. And I honestly think a lot of diseases can be prevented if there's knowledge about it. And so I feel like, you know, pre-diabetes, not eating correct, eating the right foods will be the future. And ChatGPT will be able to help educate our patients.
I agree. That's wonderfully important. Let me explain an example which I came across in my personal life recently. It's what I would regard as being a fairly extreme application, but maybe not. The situation was this, and I'd love to hear what you think of this. A friend of mine, by the way, this friend of mine has given me consent to discuss this particular case, although I'm not going to say his or her name. This friend of mine had heart palpitations a few months ago and went to her doctor because she was concerned. She then received an ECG examination. She then went for an echocardiogram, cardiac ultrasound, and then had a 7-day ECG as well. Now, all of these three assessments were then written up by a cardiologist and given to this friend of mine. But the problem is that the cardiologist's report was written in fairly jargon-laden language, which was hard to understand. Even the gist wasn't really that clear. Now, she's a busy person, and so to save time, pasted the cardiologist's report into ChatGPT and then was able to query the model on various different types of questions, some of which were very sophisticated, by the way. She was very convinced that the feedback she was getting from the model were good. They seemed highly credible, though certainly clearly expressed. And then at the end, she asked whether she had a heart problem or not, which was the $64,000 question. And it said, no, you don't, based on the evidence, but you should keep an eye on your blood pressure. Now, I can see some pros and cons with what passed here, but essentially what you have is somebody using a free piece of software to essentially replace their doctor, or at least part of their doctor. What do you make of that?
Well, this is the, and we'll touch on the scary part later, but honestly, I do see that as the future. And I know a lot of doctors out there are cringing that this technology perhaps in the future will replace them. And I'm going to advocate and say it's not going to replace a doctor. It's just going to augment the ability for you to provide better care and take you away from a lot of the administration things that you normally have to do and give you more time with your patients. As far as this particular example, it is kind of scary because if patients are using this to that level, I call it like the good, the bad, the ugly. You don't know what to expect. And I honestly can say that, sorry about that noise in the background. I honestly think that the next version, like chat, I would ask your friend to put that into ChatGPT-4. And I would be interested to see if it changes its advice or what it does. Basically, what this person did was really smart because everything in this ChatGPT is how you put the information in. And so how I enter the information is going to be different from someone that's not a doctor. What this person did, which I think is brilliant, is they used the words from a doctor and put it into the machine, and then the machine gave an output, which I would think would be pretty accurate. The problem is, and I'm sure ChatGPT, I know I've seen the disclaimer, whenever you do kind of anything like that, they're supposed to put a disclaimer in that that's not valid. In my algorithm of patients using this technology, I always say you need to verify it with your doctor because I'm worried about the hallucination effect, or it's given a half truth where it sounds good, but in reality is false. And I worry that this eventually could hurt someone, at least this rendition of ChatGPT.
It's interesting. I mean, there's a lot to say about it, right? I mean, one obvious benefit is that this person was just too busy to go to her doctor. And I mean, you can also think of people who just don't have the money to go to their doctor, people in different kind of health systems to me, and also people in developing countries where there just is no doctor. So there are all sorts. I mean, it's a very complex set of issues here, right?
No, I agree with you. In fact, I spoke with a group out of Nigeria, I want to say it was about 2 months ago, and I was advocating for them to speak to their government leaders to see how they could use ChatGPT and use it in areas that have no access to healthcare. This way, using a combination of this and some medical assistance, now they can actually give medicine to parts of the world that could not get medicine. And at that point, I think the risk-reward ratio is different, and I would advocate for it being used as long as there's a provider there. But I think there is a future there to help a certain population that would never get healthcare.
Now, one word that you've used two or three times is hallucination. So why don't we move on to the bad? We've talked about the good. So let's talk about the bad a little bit. Have you come across particular examples of ChatGPT having hallucinations that could have real world consequences that are not good?
Yeah. For one, if you don't ask ChatGPT for references, usually it will not give you references. And if you do ask for references, you have to check the references to make sure they're accurate. And I have noticed that if I'm talking about a particular disease and I say, give me a reference, and then I say, let me check up on this reference, sometimes the name does not match the article, or sometimes the author of the article, or the other is the article that's quoted has nothing to do with the reference point. And so that's a type of hallucination that they're having to deal with. Supposedly this new ChatGPT does not do that as much. It still does, but it's not as bad. But let's talk about hallucination. This is how I feel about it. For example, I'm an ER doctor. If you give me anything that's emergency medicine related, I feel very confident that I can say this is correct, this is false, this is hallucination, because I know my medicine. I know my niche market of emergency medicine. Now, if you give me a document that is very specific, and I usually use this example, a pediatric cardiologist surgery, and it's going down how the surgery is done, and I'm a doctor, right? So I should know. So I read it and I go through and I'm like, yeah, that sounds correct. But then in reality, it was hallucination from ChatGPT. It was half correct. And then I actually give it to a pediatric cardiologist and they read it. They're like, oh my gosh, Harvey, this is so wrong. This is not even close to how we do things. And that's a good example of how hallucination works. Just because we have a so-called MD behind our name doesn't mean we know everything in medicine. It just means that we know the basis. And that's where I say to patients, if you ask ChatGPT a question in cardiology and you're meeting with your cardiologist, you probably should ask the cardiologist to review that information that you use on your health. But if it's something to do with dermatology, you're not going to go to your cardiologist to ask them about some skin lesion, because they'll probably be like, yeah, the last time I looked at skin was when I was in med school. So.
Right. So you've kind of touched on what I sometimes call the perfectionist fallacy, which is that there is a very strong tendency I've noticed for people to compare AI systems to perfection, but humans just to themselves. We have to keep in mind that doctors have equivalents of hallucinations too, especially when they've been up for 24 hours and they're very, very tired, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's talk about the potential catastrophes. Have you got wind of any very serious problems in the application of ChatGPT to medicine?
Not yet. And I'm going to stress with yet. I feel like, unfortunately, it's going to happen. I mean, when you have over 100 million users and a new technology in uncharted territories, people are going to do things. One of the things I constantly say is patients are going to use ChatGPT the way it should not be used, and then not use ChatGPT the way it should be used. And those are type one and type two types errors in thinking and doing things. But to answer your question, this is my biggest fear. This is why I'm out there advocating to educate our patients on how to use ChatGPT. My biggest worry is people, for example, outside the United States, where you can go on ChatGPT, put in your symptoms, and it says, okay, you have X disease, and in reality, you may not. And then I worry that they're going to go to the local pharmacy, go get a medicine, take it, and then they're going to have a bad side effect because maybe they're allergic to the medicine. Maybe they don't realize it's contraindicated. Maybe they don't have the disease, or maybe they end up dying. And then that is my biggest worry, because I feel like the self-diagnosis, I know it went out really big with Google. They called it Dr. Google, and it still happens today. But I feel like this is even more dangerous because it's so believable and it's so customized. I can put, I'm a 50-year-old Hispanic male with XYZ, and these are the symptoms, and it's going to talk to me as if it was my doctor, and people will believe it. And that's my biggest worry, that if someone dies or something bad happens, then what's going to happen to the technology? Is this going to be paused? Is ChatGPT going to stop it, what it's doing, or, you know, what will happen? So it's just interesting, and, you know, a lot of ethics involved as well.
I guess that in a way, that's not a, it's not a scientific question, is it? It's a kind of question of societal dynamics. I mean, for example, a good example is when somebody puts their Tesla on autonomous mode and then they crash it, somebody gets killed, and it's headline news all over the world. It's obviously a tragedy, but at the same time, it's kind of ignoring the fact that there are hundreds and thousands, probably millions of car crash deaths all the time, and they never get reported on, right? So,
yeah, my analogy to that, and I try not to cringe when my kids are jumping off the couch or doing something stupid, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, they're going to break their arm or this. It's because I'm so programmed to see the worst in the emergency room, and I don't see the ones that don't ever come to the ER. Then nothing happens when they do that, and it's the same analogy. So, with that said, I love technology. I just want it to be used correctly, and I want to educate people on how to use it correctly, and I want to make sure no one ever gets hurt from this because it's not going away. Everyone's creating their own model. I honestly think we're not even far, and this is crazy even statement to say, from the day where all of ChatGPT will be living on your mobile phone, where you don't need to go on the internet, you don't need anything other than your phone, and it'll all live there for you to use.
So that education effort is obviously very important, and bravo for doing that. At the same time, I suppose people also have to be educated that there are going to be deaths, many deaths, from the imperfect results of using ChatGPT or any other AI system for medicine, right? But we have to compare that to status quo rather than to some kind of non-existent ideal.
Correct. Good point. I agree. The big picture, to your point, my goal is to see healthcare improve, to see patients get better care, to see patients get more preventive care to the point where they're living longer. They're not suffering with certain diseases. They're having a longer and better life. That's my ultimate goal. I'm old in my age. I'm almost 50. And I feel like, man, if I had this technology when I was a kid, I probably would be better at many tasks, and I'd probably see life differently, and I'd probably be better in many ways, because I feel like this educational tool would have given me such a launch in so many different ways. And then I say my age because I feel like to some extent the damage has been done. So now I'm trying to make sure that the next couple of decades, I am doing my best to take care of myself even more. But I wish I had this education or this tool to educate myself years ago.
Well, number one, Harvey, if you're at 50, you're in your prime. and number two, this is the kind of argument that kids use for trying to convince us adults that they're smarter than us, which I think has to be resisted because they're not.
No, you're right. I cringe with my kids. They think they know more than me, and I'm like, no, no you don't, dude. I've done way more, and I understand more. But I think we're just wiser because we've made the same mistakes they did. We just hide it from them.
Quite right. All right. Well, look, last question, Harvey. Apart from ChatGPT, nothing to do with large language models, what is your favorite current example of medical AI?
You see, that's a tough one, but I'll give you quick two ones. One is just AI identifying cancer on let's say chest x-ray years before the person actually is diagnosed with cancer. I think that technology is crazy. The other is I'm actually working for this company that uses AI in ultrasound, and their goal, they have a patent, so that their goal is basically you could go to a local pharmacy, go in there and do your own ultrasound, and it's AI guided. So it'll tell you, okay, push a little harder, go to the right, left. It'll take a picture and then send it to the radiologist, which I love that because they're taking a procedure that normally is in the hospital or at a imaging center back to your house. And I think this is great because now you can have increased access to healthcare and do a better job of taking care of yourself.
Which company is that? Feel free to give them a plug if you'd like to.
Oh, yeah. The name is Pons. They're out of New Jersey, and it's really exciting. Pons, P-O-N-S. Really cool company, and I'm just honored to be part of their company. I'm on their board, and I'm just kind of giving them advice on how they can do this in medicine and help others. So just really exciting to see.
Okay. And Harvey, what about your second example?
My second example, there's this interesting thing, and it's just going to be approved. It just got approval by the FDA. And I know this is going to sound a little gross, but bear with the example. Basically, there's a company, I'm going blank on the name of it. I think it's through Whiting's, but basically, every time you use a restroom, it's analyzing your metabolites, and it's able to tell what's going on with you. So it's, I'm not sure what all the diseases that is there, but it's supposed to be a home monitor so that it can catch and give you reports on your byproducts of your body, which I think, I know it sounds disgusting, but I think there's so much merit there. What if it tells you, you know, you have certain, your electrolytes are off, maybe you need to drink more Gatorade or whatever. I just think, man, this technology is going to be amazing for preventative care and helping us with diseases.
So I'm pretty sure if that machine is made by Gatorade, that's what it's going to say. So what is the name of this system? I haven't heard of that before.
We'll have to put in the show notes. I know it's through Whiting's, and I'm excited because I saw it a couple months ago, and whenever it comes out, I haven't told my wife this, but we're getting it.
She's going to be thrilled.
Yeah, that one that we'll put in the guest bathroom, it'll be in the... in the master bedroom.
Okay. And Harvey, it's been an absolute pleasure, and it's been hilarious as well somehow. So I'm very, very much obliged to you. It's been a real pleasure talking with you.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I really sincerely appreciate it. Thank you so
Cheers.
Much.
Cheers, Harvey. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. I'm Felix Beecher. Ping me on LinkedIn for more information on Omdia's services in healthcare technology. See you next time.